Wednesday, September 10th, 2025, meeting of the Garnison Council Finance Committee to order. The Assistant Clerk will please call the roll.
Councilor Gernlowitz.
Present.
Councilor Hegeland.
Present.
Councilor Mack.
Present.
Thank you. Announcement of open meeting recordings. The open meeting recording notice is up on the wall over there. Is anyone here recording other than staff? I hear none. Next on the is reading approval of meeting minutes. There are none. Item number two, we have department updates, city treasurer collector. We have Jennifer Dimmick here with us as the treasurer collector. Thank you for coming today.
Yes, thank you. Hope everyone is well.
What's that?
I hope everyone's well.
Doing well. Thank you. We have done these in the past. It's been a little bit. So just here to get any updates from you, anything you think we should know about and how things are going in the office.
Well, in July, we mailed 7,143 preliminary real estate tax bills for a total of $17,402,827.30. As of September 9th, we've collected $8,963,849.91. This is about 52% of the overall billing. But that's a second quarter installment is due November 3rd. Some people do pay two quarters at once, so it's not a fair representation of the actual number of people who have paid. We also mail 313 personal property bills for a total of $783,134.54. And as of September 9th, we've collected $431,565.33, which is about 55% of the overall billing. For motor vehicle excise, the RMV has issued four commitments for 2025. The first and largest was on January 17th for $1,938,992.62. The other three commitments totaled $606,077.65 for total billing of $2,545,070.27. As of September 9th, we've collected $2,261,802.96. We've also issued $26,236.55 in refunds and $57,139.04 in abatements. And the refunds simply are people have paid twice.
Okay.
Not, paying online, not knowing if it went through or not. Parking meter collection's been steady since July 1st. We've collected $10,483.50 from the coin and mobile app, Park Mobile. Since July 1st, 88 meter violation tickets have been issued for a total cost of $1,320, and only 46% of those tickets issued have been paid. 2 weeks ago, we needed to order a new check scanner from Fidelity Bank. All of the checks that we receive in the office are deposited directly through that scanning process. The scanner we had, which was about 5 years old, had been jamming and not reading properly. So the new one is, it's like a hot knife through butter. It's wonderful. we continue to have some issues with printing our checks. For 2 weeks back in August, the payroll checks would not print and I was forced to handwrite them. We've resolved that issue, but the alignment on it is still slightly off. Munis and IT have worked together to try and adjust the settings. They're printing, they're better, they're not still where they should be. And we've also had issues with my signature printing on the checks, both through payroll and accounts payable. And we're hoping that may be resolved if we switch to Munis forms for check printing, so it's something I need to investigate further. The Water Department, IT, and Munis have been working on upgrading the water billing module. I'm hopeful that once the upgrade is complete, we'll be able to generate a file to upload the bills to Unibank for online payment. Currently, residents can pay their bills online, but they have to know their dollar amount. Hopefully with the file, be able to go in, they'll be able to see what's due, they'll be able to calculate interest due for late bills and make the process a lot easier for the residents. I'm currently balanced with the auditor through July 31st, and I've just started reconciling our August accounts. At the beginning of the fiscal year, we switched our liability insurance to Hub International. We had a rocky start with filing some claims, but I think as of this week, we've resolved those issues, and we're still working with Maya on some of the open claims that we've had, but overall, it's been an easy transition. And as you likely know, I've been working with Community Development Planning during their transition period to get their accounts sorted out. The most challenging has been reconciling their grant software to Munis and then balancing to the bank account. There are a few entries in the grant books that still need to be completed, but by the end of the week, I should be able to turn everything back over to Director Stevens and his staff and make sure that they're up to speed and know what to do going forward to make sure everything stays in balance. And a final note, my staff is awesome.
Thank you. Questions? Councilor Eglin?
None for me today. Thank you so much.
Okay.
Councilor Matt?
No, my only question, and I may have missed this, was how many properties is the collector going after for real estate taxes? I know there's a lot of unpaid taxes for real estate on the book, and in her opinion, what can be done to be more aggressive in doing this? Thank you.
Well, we just put the unpaid taxes for fiscal 23 into tax title, and I believe there were 17 properties that had remained unpaid. We do have a significant list of tax title properties, but with the law changing as far as being able to foreclose and sell and what percentage has to go back to the homeowner compared to what the city can keep, we haven't been heavily pursuing selling the properties. It's a discussion that the mayor and I can have to see if there's any other parcels that we can submit and try and move forward with, but we've kind of slowed down on the processing and taking of the tax title properties. We do have several that are making efforts to pay, and there are some that just are not paying at all.
If I could add to that, Mr. Chairman, too, it costs us about $7,500 to send a property through the tax title process. That's just with the outside attorney that we have for tax title, because it is a very specific pinhole area of the law that we normally have an expert who's in that field take care of those cases. And also, the Commonwealth is issuing new regulations on how we can take properties via tax title foreclosure. And those regulations have yet to be released by Housing and Livable Communities because the law was only passed late last year that changes the home equity theft law that's there that basically makes it prior to that, if we foreclose on the tax title, the city took full ownership of the land, and if we sold it, we maintain 100% of the proceeds of that sale. What this new law says is that if we were to foreclose on the property and the city take ownership of the property and then we sell it, we can only maintain how much that property owed us originally in taxes and have to write a check to the previous owner for the difference between the sale price and what they owed us in taxes.
No cost included in that for the cost of getting the tax title?
That's probably going to, they said they'd address that in the regulations that are there.
Okay.
Right now, the only thing we see is if a house sells, a house owed us, let's use round numbers, $100,000 in back taxes. We foreclosed on it, sold it for $300,000. We maintain $100,000 and then write a check to the previous homeowner for $200,000. Mm-hmm. So that process there is still being worked out right now with the administration. So we're just waiting to see how those roll out.
Before you do any further. That makes sense. Okay.
There are some that were already in process. So those are continuing in process. It's just we haven't added
the new law apply? Is it in process? Is it the old law or is it the new law?
It's the new law.
Okay. Just quick, you mentioned the paper checks, printing the paper checks. How many employees, roughly, do you know are still on paper checks? How's that transition going?
In the summer, it's higher because a lot of the temporary employees do get the paper checks as opposed to direct deposit. And then, thankfully, everything was working for the first school payroll pay run because all the new hires, all their direct deposits have to be pre-noted, so it's a physical check. But on an average week, I'd say there's maybe 10.
Okay.
Not many at all.
A lot of people have moved over to the, mm-hmm. the exceptions you mentioned,
yeah.
moved over to the system. Perfect. that's all I had. Just thank you for coming today.
Okay.
Appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Down to section three, first time on the agenda, item 11683, a measure authorizing the mayor to enter into an intermunicipal agreement for veteran services with the town of Hubbardston from the period beginning on January 1st, 2026 through June 30th, 2028. Mr. Mayor.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I will start off by saying that this is not something that's overly time sensitive, as if you read the language of the agreement itself, this wouldn't take effect until January 1st. The town of Hubbardston's veteran service officer is being deployed as part of her role in the Army Reserves, and she has decided that with her deployment, she will be resigning from the town of Hubbardston, one, because she feels like the services offered by a veteran service office do need to continue in any capacity, but also that she wasn't able to fulfill the role whether or not she was going to be deployed or not. So the town administrator for the town of Hubbardston reached out to my office with this proposal at the request of his select board. The former director of veteran services here, Corey Hasselman, did meet with myself to go over the proposal with the administration and select board members of the town of Hubbardston. Hubbardston has already signed on to this agreement. This means that they are fully on board with what's here. Unless we make any changes, they would be okay with those as well. This is set the same way that we've done all of our other veteran service intermunicipal agreements, in which we take the population of the community per the latest census and charge $2 per person, because the minimum staffing levels, which you also see in the guide that's included in your packet, are based off of population of veterans, not just veterans who utilizes the services of the office. This does still keep us in the category of our current staffing levels, so we would not have to add any additional staff to the office. This would just add the additional community, and talking with Director Davis, our new director who's currently here on his probationary period, he also views this as manageable as he saw the operation of the office when he interned here through his master's fellowship and working with that. So this is before you. I would add that to our Veterans Service District along with the towns of Ashburnham, Westminster, Winchendon, Princeton, and Ashby. So this would be the sixth community on top of Gardner in the district.
What are the current staffing? What's the current staffing in the Veterans Office right now?
We currently have a full-time director, a full-time assistant director, and a full-time administrative staff.
Okay. The director, the new director, have they officially started yet, or when is their start?
So his first day for his probationary period was yesterday. So he is officially fully on board now.
Okay. Councilor Mack, questions?
Yeah, I do have a question. On the in the packet, on the email from former Director Hasselman on Monday, dated Monday, August 25th, in the subject line, it says regarding Templeton intermunicipality agreement. It seems like Templeton is the only one that we haven't done this with. Is that just an error? My question is to the mayor and the subject line, or is Templeton also a municipality that's going to be pursuing this?
That is a error in a way, Counselor, and what I mean by in a way is that if you remember a couple years ago, Templeton had initially approached the city about joining the district, and then last minute their select board voted to not pursue that, so they did not enter the district. But what happened was is I forwarded an email from our previous director, Lynette Gabrilla, to Director Hasselman saying, hey, this is the population breakdown that Lynette gave us when Templeton was interested in joining. Can you do something like this for Hubbardston so we know where we fall within the grid? And so he replied to that email with those population numbers, which is why that subject line says Templeton on it. It was the he was replying to an old email from back when Templeton thought about joining us.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate the clarification. And I know this item also will be going in front of the Welfare Subcommittee as well. Thank you. Thank you, Mayor Nicholson.
Good eye. I didn't even catch that.
Nothing else for me. I think obviously, like Councilor Mack said, this needs to go in front of welfare as well. As you stated, we have a bit of time to work on this. I'd like to get a chance to talk to the director too, let them get their feet wet a little bit, and have them come in and talk to us what they think about the staffing. Because I know, according to the chart, at least where I'm reading the chart, where that bracket is a very narrow bracket where we're falling right now, so we're almost up into only like 5,000 or so.
Yeah.
In that bracket, so we're almost to the next one for the guidelines. So just to get a fuller grasp on doing this. I'd like to keep it here if there's no objections. And also send it to welfare if welfare wants to start having conversations about it as well.
I have no objection. It will be on the September 30th welfare subcommittee agenda.
Okay. Good to hear. The item will stay with finance as well, but also get sent to welfare with council president approval, obviously. Next item, item 11684, a measure declaring a portion of the land located at 25 Main Street, identified as Parcel B on the attached plot plan, as surplus for the purpose of leasing for commercial use for a minimum value of $10 per year. Mr. Mayor.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. If you look at the attached plot plan, this is what we've commonly referred to as Bullnose Park in the city, the small seating area in front of the Bullnose building located at 25 Main Street. It is not a designated city park, so we are able to lease it. If you look at the map that's there, I want to stress that this is Parcel B, which is at the top of the triangle, and not Parcel A, which is George Sweeney parking lot, which is at the bottom of that. But Parcel A is not part of this. We are maintaining that as a city parking lot. Parcel B is just that top seating area. The process right now would be to put this out for some type of commercial use so that we can get the property used. We do know that there is a restaurant going into 25 Main Street that has expressed interest in it. Depending on the values, it depends on if we have to go out to RFP, if we don't have to go out to RFP. Those processes are being currently looked at. But this is just so we have the authorization to even move forward with allowing someone to go out there because a private restaurant or a private entity would not be able to do their own outdoor seating in that area that they maintain, oversee, run, and everything like that unless we were to lease something like that. And that way they have a fee interest in the property itself. So that's what this request before you is for today. I will say one of the questions that I did initially receive on this is whether or not the fountain that was installed there a couple years ago would remain there. If this goes forward, we would take that out and either relocate it or repurpose it, but that way would allow for some extra room that's there in that space for whatever outdoor purposes the final leaseholder would have.
For a lease like this, what would the normal length be?
Like 20 years.
A 20-year lease for this? Okay. And that is that etch in stone? Is that part of what they would propose?
That's part of what they would propose. On average, they're 20 years.
Okay. And once we authorize this, this is out of our hands and in the hands of the executive, or does it come back for us?
It would come back to you guys for the lease. Yeah. Similar to the community center, where you'd authorize the declaring it surplus, and then I would have to come back and ask for authorizations to sign the lease.
The actual lease itself.
Yeah.
Okay. I just know in some cases we lease things for maybe longer than is prudent.
We can go up to 99 years legally. It's just on average you don't try to do a commercial enterprise agreement for more than 20.
Okay. Other questions? Council Mack?
I do have a couple questions. I think 20 years is a long lease. What happens if the leasee, if it happens to be a business right around there, goes out of business? Does that end the lease, or do they still have lease on that parcel for the remaining 20 years? And my other question will be to the mayor is, part of the flower program downtown, would we still have access to the flower bed at the end, which is part of Parcel B? I don't want that to bring up any issues in the future unless it becomes part of an island program in the future. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
So,
Councillor, to answer both of those questions, the answer to that is actually based on the language of the lease agreement itself. So as the lease document gets negotiated between my office and the final leaseholder, we would put things in there to make it so that we would not inhibit any access to that front flower pot. If you look at the area that is listed as Parcel B, it also doesn't go all the way up to that flower bed for that very purpose. So the city would maintain from the flagpoles up to the flower bed and the flower bed itself. To make sure that, one, we have access to the flagpoles we just installed there and to that flower bed that's there. In the lease agreement itself, similar to what we have at the community center, it does have language in there on what happens if the business does go out of business, relocate, move, close, and things like that. It would terminate the lease with that as well, too, within a certain number of days, which is normally 30 to 60.
Thank you. I mean, there was obviously kind of a concern I had, too, the length of the lease and us losing control for that period of time with no one there. Councilor Hagelin.
Thank you. Appreciate the information. So it sounds like they would be responsible for the maintenance and everything of that chunk. And then obviously it would be their sole use, so people that are used to maybe eating at Parker House or grabbing a coffee, Victoria Coffee, would no longer have access to that space.
But depending on the process, they may be the one who has the successful application for that space.
Also true. Yeah, yep, depending on who is interested and who applies for it. Thank you. So looking at the $990 in taxes per year, and then if you did the minimum of $10, $1,000 a year for that 20 years, have you thought about that minimum of $10? Are you looking at any other number? Or are you planning to do it at the $10?
I mean, we normally set the minimum and see what the proposals come in at. That's how we've normally done it in the past. Okay. And then we normally get the best financial situation for the city in the end.
Perfect. Thank you.
No
other questions? Their motion?
Yeah, I'll move to recommend that a full council of the measure be authorized.
Second. Motion made by Councilor Hagelin, seconded by Councilor Jernelowitz to recommend to the full council that the measure be authorized. Is there further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Councilor Mack, I'm not sure.
Point of order, Councilor Jernelowitz, do we have to do a roll call?
I don't think we have to do, we don't have to do any roll calls.
I'm on the phone. We don't? Okay, then aye.
We could do a roll call if you... Oh, because you're on the phone. You are correct. I'm sorry, Councilor Mack.
Yeah,
clerk, please call the roll.
Councilor Dernalowitz?
Yes.
Councilor Hagelin?
Yes.
Councilor Mack?
Yes.
Thank you, Councilor Mack, for catching that.
You're welcome.
Item 11685, a measure declaring the land located at 13-17 West Line Street, as defined in the attached approval, not required A&R plan as surplus for the purpose of disposition. Mr. Mayor?
Thank you, Mr. President. This is the West Line Street parking lot located at the intersection of West Line Street and Remain Street across the street from the Gardner Library. This is something that is a little unique of a situation that we have for the city, and I will say if we weren't having the Remain Street project construction currently underway with the 100-space parking lot that's being constructed on Remain Street, and if we didn't have a situation where the parking deck over on West Line Street wasn't also just reconstructed by the lofts at 30 Pines, since the lower level of that is a public parking lot, this probably wouldn't be something that we would be looking at. But this is a very unique lot in the city in that there are two different planning board decisions that actually assign spaces in those lots to private entities in the area, two separate private entities in the area that make it so that it's almost like we are almost in some ways required to reserve spots for that private entity in this public lot so they get the benefit, but we provide all the maintenance, all the plowing, all the other expenses associated with the lot. So to clean that up, just clean up the process, make everything better, and this wouldn't affect those planning board decisions that are there too. I'm requesting that we sell the lot that's at that location. And then put it out for the RFP process so that any of the interested parties who are in that area, either the ones who have, you know, current rights to that property under the city's ownership or any of the other places in the area that are looking for parking in the downtown, would be able to purchase this parking lot for their uses based off of the proposals that they submit.
Thank you. Questions? Councilor Mack?
I'm just concerned about losing this parking lot. I know it's expensive to maintain for the city, and I'm just concerned about losing this parking lot for the amount of apartments and residents downtown for off-street parking for the winter. I just want to make sure that there is still sufficient parking, and Rear Main Street is far from being completed. So what would happen in the meantime with those cars? So my immediate concern about giving up this parking lot.
No, I think those are very valid concerns. Mr. Mayor, I don't know if you wanted to speak to those at all.
Sure. Right now, Remain Street is slated to be completed, at least construction-wise, by the end of December of this year. There is some landscaping work that needs to be done in the spring, but that shouldn't inhibit parking on the location. If this does get approved by the City Council, there's a minimum 30-day advertising period, because this is real estate. While this does fall under a certain threshold that we would not normally have to go out for the RFP process, we can go out for an RFP process, which I believe would be the most prudent way to go forward with this. just to allow for the most open, transparent, and clean way to make sure that everyone has a chance and ability to submit if they choose to for this process. So that's a minimum 30 days there. It normally takes about another 30 days for a review of all the proposals that are there, and then there's the different closing costs after that, which is normally another 30 to 45 days. So actually, by the time this would go through, we're looking at the December-January timeframe, which would coincide with the completion of the construction over at the Rim Main Street site, which is why now is when I put it up to try to coincide with each other.
It does. I do have some concerns as well on just giving up the right of a piece of property in perpetuity in downtown for unknown. Who knows what's going to happen in the future and what it could be utilized for. I don't know the logistics and the feasibility of possibly doing something like a longer lease of some type that's maybe longer than a 5-year, a 20-year, something, a 10-year, or something like that. Having someone take over the use of it. I'm also worried about you mentioned the businesses there, who's parking there, and then there's someone going to be barred from parking there that currently utilizes the lot. I don't know if we have any kind of information surrounding the business impact at all for those businesses or workers down there.
I'd have to look. The property is currently under a license agreement and has been under a license agreement for some time with Mass Ave Rentals, who has the special permit from the planning board designating those spots as part of their location.
Okay.
So right now, technically, it's just the residents of the Goodenough Pearson building that have a right to park there.
Okay.
How many new spaces are going to be in Rear Main? I think you said it, but
about 100.
About 100, so, okay. I had the same thought. I was, it's about 50 spaces. I know we share them with the residents there. The other thing I was going to ask about, establishing a minimum amount of $1,000 to be paid, is that what the sale price minimum?
Minimum,
which
is something to change.
Yeah,
okay. I mean, I really don't know what we would get, to be honest with you. You sell a property, you can easily get an appraisal on what a house on an acre of land would be for. You don't really get that type of data for a parking lot of this.
Of this is going on.
Yeah, plus it's not a large parking lot to begin with, too. So that's why there's not a lot of comparables to go with it.
No, the only thing I made me think was the last time when Mayor Hawk had tried to sell this at $75,000. That was years ago.
Yeah, there was twice that this was tried to be, one for $75,000 and one for $1.
And I think both times the council shot those numbers down, so I was worried about the $1,000 threshold as well.
And I'm more than happy if the council feels the need to amend that number to a different number. I'm also happy for that too. It's more just cleaning up the actual. We've got a parking lot that right now is technically a public lot, but also a restricted lot for both the license agreement that it's under, but also the special permits issued by the planning board designating that site that's public property for a private use, and just trying to clean it up.
I'd like to see how it's divided up currently. I'm not ready to recommend this to the full council, and this isn't something I understand. Probably why the mayor's has it in front of us. He'd like to get it going before the snow season, to have someone else taking care of it. But to dispose of a property downtown without further due diligence, I think would be an error on our part.
No, I agree. I'd be curious to see what that plot, for whatever small as it is, might be worth, even just for a frame of reference for us. And then I think, too, as you were talking, Mr. Mayor, I was thinking, too, even cities like Leominster, where it might be a municipal lot, but they clearly signed the 6 or so spaces for this restaurant or that apartment building. Maybe that's a better alternative or something we could look at and think about based on.
That would also require council approval through a long-term lease for those sites, and that's how that works in those instances. I'd also have to go back and pull the special permit to see how many of those spots are technically designated for the buildings that have designations in that lot right now, too.
I think it would be great to have all that information.
It's also very much not time sensitive yet. We've got plenty of time before the snow falls, we hope. So.
Yeah.
Councilor Mack, anything further you'd like to ask or add?
I just agree with both Councilor Gernelowitz and Hague on that. I think we need more information. The other thing, I don't see a priority of maintaining it for the winter. It could be very high. Our DPW is pretty well staffed. They've been doing this for years, as they do the West Street parking lot to offset costs. It wouldn't I wouldn't be opposed to the city, you know, to start selling winter parking decals for a nominal cost. And so people have to find a place to get their cars off the street in the winter. And although, you know, it wouldn't totally fund the cost of snow removal, but it would help. I just, I would like to see this stay on our calendar. I'm a little bit hesitant right now to recommend this to full council. Thank you.
Thank you. So no further objection. We'll keep it on the calendar and get a little further information. If there's any other questions that any of the councilors have, I'm sure the mayor will confirm those by email and get that information in front of us.
Absolutely.
For next time. On to the next item. Item 11689, in order appropriating an additional sum of money from available enterprise funds, various receipts reserved to various accounts for the fiscal year beginning July 1st, 2025 to June 30th, 2026. Mr. Mayor.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I want to say that this order, as well as the next one, 11690, have the same explanation for them. If you remember in the past several informal meetings of the City Council that were had, I mentioned that all unappropriated anticipated revenues have to be appropriated by October 1st in order for us to be able to meet the tax recap requirements and file for all of the FY25 year-end closeouts and official setting of FY26. So these are the unappropriated anticipated revenues of the various enterprises accounts and appropriating those into reserve accounts for the enterprises. And the next one is the same exact reasoning for that, but for the general fund itself into a reserve account and the unclassified account.
To read into the record, by the way, the mayor's talking about is item 11690, in order to raise and appropriate an additional sum of money for various expenditure budget for the fiscal year beginning July 1st, 2025 to June 30th, 2026. Further questions from the councilors?
Could just add a little more to that, Mr. Chairman. So the way reserve accounts work, we did this when I worked in the town of Rutland. We used to do something like this here when it came to salaries. I will say this is a general one so that anything coming out of it would have to require a council vote. So some of this went towards a salary proposal. Whether it be some or all, the city council would have to vote to transfer that from that account into the various salary accounts. That way it's a more transparent and open process that's there. But this at least puts it into the appropriated budget so that we have it all there. We have a final bottom number, and that's what we need for the tax recapitulation process. So for both the enterprise account and the general fund account, that's how this works, is it puts it into basically a catch-all bucket that would then have to be voted to remove out of that.
Thank you. Councilor Mack, I'll start with you. Seeing you're on the phone, it's easier to start here. Do you have any questions?
I do not.
Okay. Councilor Eichel?
No, nothing for you. Actually, I think the answer to the one question I was maybe going to ask was if this money's in the reserve to leave that account, what happens? But it sounds like it's a council vote, so that clears up.
No, there are, if I may, Mr. Chairman, there are some cases where a salary vote can, you can transfer salaries to salaries, expenses to expenses without a council vote normally. The best practice for reserve accounts is you always take the extra step for a reserve account just because you're taking out of a reserve into another line item, be it a notification or a council vote or something like that. Where there's been talk on salaries, the reason why it's an expense reserve account is that way we require a council vote to remove it up and make it so that it's clear how much money is coming into that proposal that's there or if it's going into any other account. So for me personally, I would either notify the council if it's, you know, an expense to an expense, or if it goes to a salary to expense, that would require a council vote to do that.
Thank you. I have no further question on this. I entertain a motion.
If no objection, we'll take 11689 and 11690 together.
I have none.
None.
So with that, I move to recommend to the full council the orders be adopted.
Second. Motion made by Councilor Peglin, second by Councilor Generalowitz to recommend item 11689 and 11690 be adopted by the full council. Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, the assistant clerk will please call the roll.
Councilor Generalowitz?
Yes.
Councilor Peglin?
Yes.
Councilor Mack?
Yes.
Okay. Our last item 11691. Discussions related to non-union salaries for employees of the golf course and library. I know, or at least in some of our discussions at the full council level, the golf course and the library weren't being addressed. We said we're going to keep, make sure we have that in front of us, keep it aware. I wanted to get an item in front of the finance committee, so there's a placeholder for it. I really had nothing further for that, at least at this point, but if either council would like to discuss it further, we can do it for now. Councilor Mack?
No, I appreciate you putting this on as a placeholder so it's in front of us moving forward.
I agree. I think it's a great, I have nothing immediate now. I think we'll see how things proceed and for the other.
You see how we need to act on it or don't need to act on it.
Yeah, yeah.
So, no objection. We'll leave this item on our calendar. Agenda. That is the end of our, so our agenda. I would entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second. Motion made by Councilor Hegland. Second by Councilor Dernalowitz to adjourn. The clerk will please call the roll.
Councilor Dernalowitz?
Yes.
Councilor Hegland?
Yes.
Councilor Mack?
Yes.
Meeting stands adjourned. Thank you, everyone.